Morning or good afternoon now. How are you?
Hey, Rob, we're trying to get you turned up in here. We got the whole team. How you doing?
Good, good. Terrific. Thank you. Want me to check the volume here?
No, we're good. Your line is clear. We didn't have
You're good now.
All right. Awesome. Great. Well, welcome back. We've got a little excitement these weeks, but I guess there was some euphoria.
You've been in this business long. Why were people so excited about such a normal downturn?
I know. It's always different for them. It's always new, even though it's, the same old thing we get every few years. It's always new. It's always going to be different, and we got plenty of talking heads that make it into a crazy land. And there's usually something that exacerbates it, like, leverage and new people that never understood what they bought, and like mortgage-backed securities or inverted these crazy VIX inverted VIX investments. So I guess it always makes it interesting. So how was your week, and are you staying on the path?
Honestly, probably not as much this week. We're preparing for a client event Friday, and we have about double the attendance we usually do, so it's been kind of crazy. And so we have not done as much this week. I know I have not on the Supernova end.
So I think we really fell off. I mean, anyone else can speak. I totally fell off the wagon because I was trying to figure out something intelligent to say on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock when there's going to be 115 people show up to listen. So, right, wrong, or indifferent, Coach. That's what I've been focused on, and not this. I don't know if we've made any other headway from our last discussion. We may need to go back to the basics. I don't believe we have a minimum account size. I don't believe we have a target minimum or a bare minimum.
We did start discussing all that, though, and came over, what we need to do and why, and we started that discussion on the minimum.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's your, I can only be your consultant, right? I'm your consultant. I'm not you guys. You guys have got to decide why are you doing this? Why did it make sense to do Supernova? And then how do you make your practice as aligned as possible to what will be the best in terms of serving your best clients and then growing your business? So, you're good at what you do already. The question is, if you want to grow and deliver a better level of service, there's probably some changes that would make sense. And I'm here to help you make those, But you guys, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with having lower minimums than the math tells you. You just have to understand that it will take you longer to reach your goals if you don't open up accounts that are in the sweet spot of your present business.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, mathematically, your minimum should be $1 million, an absolute minimum $1 million, and your target minimum of $2 million. And if you opened up clients that had $2 million, you could open up 30 of them probably and come close to doubling your business. And that's about as simple as it gets. If you want to open up clients with 800,000, it's just going to take more clients, and it's going to take more work.
Right.
And that's, you know, and you may need to add new players on your team and things like that, but that's okay. It's just, you know, what you want to do. And that's the, you know, that's what life is, right? Our job as financial advisors, to me, is to help our clients grow up and make better choices.
Okay.
And so my job with you guys is to help you make better choices. And to make things clear that you may not have talked about or don't want to talk about, or, you know, that's part of the growing up process, I think, for all of us, is to face the given reality that we only have so much time, so much energy, and how do we best use it, and how do we keep fear, which is our biggest debilitator in anything we do, how do we keep fear out of our, out of the game of making good decisions.
Makes sense.
Okay. So where did you discuss it? What were your, did you come to conclusions? Or was it just conversation?
On MacMan?
MacMan and direction and strategy and anything else you talked about.
I do think that we verbalized it, didn't we? I think we verbalized that we wanted to establish a minimum, right, wrong, or indifferent. And I'd really like for everybody to speak up. Darlene, I'd love to hear from you about this. So I think you've got a good head on our shoulders. But I think that we looked at the math, and I think that we saw, or at least I'm speaking for myself, that we ought to have, you know, we ought to have a target minimum of $2 million. That's really where we are. That's mm-hmm. who I get excited about working with. And at least a $750,000 bare minimum. But I think this is it. I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, Laura, you got a call last week from this doctor or somebody in Ada, and he loved everything about what he saw, and he's ready to fire his advisor now and come in. And I think we have such a hard time saying no, especially when we have somebody that, I mean, clearly we can help them tremendously. They want our help. They're ready to do it now. And they're favored.
That's a hard one.
And so I think that that's, you know, I don't know that we, and so that's what I was asking everybody, and it was a slippery slope. I don't think we stopped at a hard minimum. I don't think we have a hard minimum.
Yeah.
Right? You know? I think 750 was like this, and then, but you know, if they're younger and they're saving enough, we'll take 200 or 500 or 100 or hell, I don't know what our hard minimum is. Maybe we'll do a $2,000 IRA or 3,500 or whatever. The,
and what's the rule of, like you said, it's kind of, if someone's under, you would also, you'd want them to, if they're favored, you'd want to be there in what, 2 years or 3 years or something like that?
Yeah, 24 months. Yeah.
Okay.
So technically, it should be somebody that can get to $2 million in 24 months is what you're really taking.
The flip side of all that, and when I read over the material today, is what are we doing to, you know, better serve our existing clients? And then I think today, Debbie, you got a call from a $2 million household, Wayne Stone and Ann Ackerman. But they were the ones that were calling us. We were reacting. We weren't being proactive. And so somewhere we got to get clarity about that. But if we were more proactive with Wayne Stone, I mean, that guy knows everybody in town, and he is connected,
right?
For whatever reason, he hadn't referred any to us in a long time. And it might be because we're not very proactive.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know? I don't know. But I do know that we spent some time talking to a prospect that may not meet our minimum, and on the other hand, we didn't have the time to be proactive with Wayne. No, we didn't. He said, I'll call y'all back. And that's another thing that Debbie's getting, and Debbie is our client, I don't know what you'd call her, I mean, your term would be the VP of brand.
Right.
But I think Debbie had a conversation, you can speak up with Wayne, and he said he would call us in February. So it's just give and take, and I don't know if there's, you know, we don't have a lot of bright line rules. It's that we always try to be client focused, period. That's our tagline. It's what we try to be. But at the end of the day, I think we do need to establish who our ideal client is and who our bare minimum client is and have some... Because I think it's a failure of leadership on my part. We don't have any bottom line rules. We have so many exceptions that there is no minimum.
It's just, look, don't feel like you're the only guy. I mean,
I imagine we're not.
No,
I know everybody's trying to do the best thing they can. I mean, you're what
the whole industry is. I mean, it's good and bad, right? I mean, that's the way the whole industry grew up, right? Thank you. Thank God somebody wants to trust us. Thank God somebody wants to do business with us. Let's take anybody. And that is the more is better world. And that works great until it doesn't. Until you can't do any more work. You know, you're done. You're busted. And you have no more time. Or you need to, you know, go and hire another 4 people for your team. Hang on 1 second.
I might have left my little mask here. I just find it. Did you want to say something?
I'll get. You go ahead. If I find your guy, I'll let you. Thanks. Bye. Getting some work done around the house. So, you know, we just became, you know, if you remember in the book, we just became too frustrated with the more is better world. And, you know, at some point you say, okay, why is it that every other profession has appointments for every client and you can't just walk in and see them? You know, why do they operate as professionals and we operate like an emergency room?
I mean, but Darlene, you take those walk-ins and Darlene doesn't mind. There's a walk-in today. I don't know who the hell it was. I don't know what the emergency was, but they came in.
It was an emergency, and the client who I gave him an IRA application for his wife the other day was bringing me a check.
See, none of this is really ever a problem, darling, and the clients love it.
I think it's
but we have like one a day.
It's not a lot.
Maybe 2 to 3 a week, and they're always dropping off checks.
That's the blowback I get trying to implement Supernova around here, Rob. Is that they're like, Brian, you're just freaking out of your mind. They're bringing us money. You want me to say no? I'm like, well, I don't know. I got to make an appointment just to get my damn hair trimmed. Maybe they can call and make an appointment.
But at the same time, if you want to go to your doctor's office and drop off a check, you could walk in, drop off a check, say, put this on my account,
that's,
and walk out.
That's true.
I mean, so...
You could sit down with them for an hour.
Yeah.
But that's... Yeah.
But at the same time, when these clients are coming in and bringing checks, and... At this right now, I don't have anybody that's a problem that's coming all the time or anything. And when they come in, I'm looking to report with them.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it'd be a problem if they're coming and saying, "Hey, I need a meet."
Yeah.
And I don't know what you do with that. It doesn't. Somebody doesn't come in and just take Darlene in and take an hour. But there is one particular guy I love him to death as a human being. But we have a guy named Andy that comes in. So he comes in at least twice a month, and I don't know what for, but Darlene and Andy get along, and they get the work done, and, you know, Darlene doesn't mind it. Actually, Rob, nobody minds it except for Brian, and I feel like the bad guy around here.
Because
I get pissed. I'm like, no, I can't go to get my hair trimmed without an appointment, and it freaks me out.
Well, the truth is if you if Darlene can take an hour with a guy walking in, then you've got plenty of capacity.
Oh, there's no question. I don't ever. They never come talk to me, so I don't know if it's really a problem. Maybe I'm just getting up talking about nothing.
You know, if you've got that much capacity, you can take on more clients.
I mean, I think we could just be more organized and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where we need your help. I mean, you know, we've got a killer team, and they hire us because of our team. But, you know, I don't know how to... I think we need an organization based on where we are. I do think we need a minimum. We can't say no.
Well, why don't you make your minimum $750 and that's it? You know, just make that it. I mean, that won't hurt you that much. It's just a little bit lower than your than your average, and you have capacity, so take some $800,000 clients. That's okay. But what I hear you saying is that the organization part of Supernova is going to be very helpful.
Right. Oh, yeah, I think that's already really good into like a utopia in my mind, if it would really run as smoothly as, you know,
we need a consistent contact schedule.
I would love to be ahead of, you know, proactive rather than reactive. And we never seem to get there, and then when we get enough space to where I can see we're going to get there, then I'm the guilty one, and I figure out, well, I got a new scheme for going out and gathering up a bunch more clients, and then we're behind the eight ball again.
Well, that's good, but you just want to make sure that they're bigger than your smallest clients and that you can reassign those clients.
Right.
So you never get more clients. I mean, the idea is that this is the end of more clients unless you want to hire more staff in terms of another FA. So you say, okay, I'm going to have 70 clients and that's it. Okay? No more, ever. All right, and I can double my business and still have 70 clients. And I can triple my business and still have 70 clients.
Well, Rob, what really freaks me out is that I'm 54 and our average client is probably 70. So they're going to die and I'm going to be broke.
Now, don't worry. Now, here's the story, okay? When I started in 1972, our average client was 65. And when James Gorman came to me and talked to me about starting an emerging investors program, I said to him, in 1972, our average client was 65, and here it is, 2000 or whenever I was talking to him, and it was, our average client was 65. And in 20 years, our average client will be 65. And he said, why is that? I said, because that's when they get their money. Okay? I mean, that's when they need us. Okay? We don't want to waste our time going and getting a bunch of emerging clients, because they're going to be bored with us by the time they get their money, and they're going to go to Northern Trust or somebody else. So, we want to be the place they come to when they get their money. We don't want to be, you know, the great big garden that grows everything, okay? We can't. We can't grow everything. So I said, don't waste your time prospecting or having programs to bring in emerging clients.
The younger clients.
That's for other people to do. We're the place they come when they have $1 million or $2 million, and they don't want to manage it themselves anymore. All right, so that's what you want to be. You want to be the place they come, not the place that you grow from, you know, $2,000 account up to, you know, $200,000 account. That's great, but that's not what we do. And so don't worry about your clients being 70. That's okay. You want to prospect people when they have their money.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So that's not the issue that I'm most concerned about is the guy that has to think about calling you in February rather than knowing that you're going to be calling him.
Yeah. Well, and that's totally fair. I mean, we did leave it with him after doing a review fairly recently. You want to say something, Laura?
This particular client was on my schedule this week to remind him to send me Social Security.
Oh.
He had sent an email in December. He had it on his calendar to call, and I had it on my calendar to remind him what else I needed. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't that. It was like a joint effort.
Yeah.
We knew this was going to happen. We knew he was going to call and set his own appointment.
But everyone should be that way. Good.
Right.
Yeah,
most of them aren't that good, right? They'll go 6 months without calling you.
That's right.
Unless you call them. And then, you know, in that time, if someone is diligent in prospecting them and showing them a better business experience, So they're vulnerable to being taken. And so, you know, that may not be the case with any of your clients, but the industry says they're vulnerable. Okay? And so you want to create a model that puts up a big wall of confidence around your clients where none of them ever say, well, I haven't heard from my guy in 6 months.
Right.
Okay, or 3 months. I mean, I've got hundreds and hundreds of examples of people who lost clients because they haven't called them. And so we just don't want to be that group, no matter where we are. So let's get to the organization piece.
Yeah.
The key for us is that we build systems so that we, you, and your team are interdependent on each other, and it's not somebody's procrastination or their desire to be, or their inability just because they're too busy to call clients. So everything gets scheduled for you as a financial advisor. The appointments are set. Everything is done. Your job is to be like the doctor or the dentist and just show up. Right? So you're prepared, but you show up. So everybody is the, you know, I use the example of a dentist office. Who's really in charge? When you walk in, who's running the dentist office? The dentist may own it, but who's running it? It's the administrator. They hand off the patient to the dental hygienist who prepares the client, the patient for the dentist, and then the dentist comes in, makes a few suggestions, and then before the client leaves, they pay their bill and set another appointment. So the person really running the practice is the administrator. And that's who we want to run your practice. And that's why we're all dependent on that person's ability to get organized, be organized, and stay organized. And then everybody else is organized. And we use the folders. They're medical folders. They're just like, you know, the dentist uses or the doctor uses. Even though they say they don't use them, they want to be electronic, they still use the folders. And there's something in our work that's kind of magical about the folders. The clients love them. Gives them something concrete to stay organized. I mean, frankly, I use them for everything. Even though I have things on my computer, I have things on my phone, I have things backed up, I have folders for everything I do. You know, I have them for my trips, I have them for my business meetings, you know, for my, if I've got a board that I'm on, I have a folder for it. So I'm always organized. I don't have loose leaf pages flopping around and drop and fall out. And it's very convenient, very easy system to use. And we have about a 99% adherence rate to use of the folders. There's one or two teams every couple of years that will decide to go electronic. But, you know, I've had them go electronic and then they come back to using the folders.
Okay, well, this is another one of those areas if we just get the basics and get something accomplished.
Yeah.
I still don't know that we got a minimum. Rob says 750, we ought to establish that.
Yeah.
Team, where are we on the use of the paper folders in this age of we have red tail, we've got iPhones.
We have one for everyone. We don't have everything he's got in there, which I think we should. I like having some more information.
What about the whole process? Rob, can you talk to us about, I can't think of one of our clients that has been given a folder and is following our system.
No, we haven't done that.
We haven't done that. What about that, Rob?
The what?
To the client.
Giving the folders to the clients. Clients love the folders. I suggest giving them a two-hole punch wrapped in a nice as a present and say, you know, give them the folder, explain the folder to them, and then say, hey, I've got a little present for you. You hand them the two hole punch, and they open it up, and they go, wow, two hole punch. Yeah, you know, I say, well, most people do not have one. And we just thought it was, you know, you just had to go out and buy it if you were going to use the system. And so we provide it for you. And they go, wow, you've thought of everything. See, and when they say that, you consider that mission accomplished. You just, when they say, you thought of everything, that means they don't have to think of anything. And there aren't many people in their life where they don't have to worry about them. So, you are one of those people they don't have to worry about. They trust you, and you think of everything. You anticipate what it is that they need ahead of time, and you provide it for them. So that's just a very small example of anticipation of their needs. And so it's a nice demonstration for you. So they'll keep that folder. And what you say to them is, look, we're going to have a call every month so you can relax. You don't have to. I'm going to send you an agenda of what we're going to cover. Anything that you've mentioned in the past or we've gone through in your financial plan, we've discussed that we may not have completed, that's going to show up in the agenda. And then when we send you the agenda, if there's something that's on your mind that you'd like to discuss, please just email us back and we'll put it on the agenda. And at the end of the call, we're going to send you an executive summary of what we discussed and agreed on. If there's something that I'm supposed to do, I'll put myself in there. If I'm asking for you to follow up on something, your name will be on there. So you know exactly what it is that we're going to need and do moving forward. And they're like, wow, this is pretty cool. And you can use the analogy to, look, we like to think of ourselves as your chief financial officer. You're the CEO of your family business, your company. And we're the CFO. We're the chief financial advisor. We're here to advise you. You make the ultimate decision, but we give you the advice. And we have a monthly board meeting, so we're going to have an agenda for each one and then an executive summary for each meeting. Some of them will be very brief, maybe 15 minutes. If you're busy, maybe 10 minutes. Others will go longer when we have something more serious to discuss. And our in-person meetings will be probably longer, but they won't need to go more than 50 minutes because we've been talking every month. So instead of having, you know, 10 issues that we need to discuss at our annual meeting, we're going to have the semi-annual, and we'll be, since we're talking every month, we may have two or three items on the list that we've discussed, but we'll be caught up. We'll decide whether we need to update the financial plan, and we'll make some other decisions at that time. How's that sound? Well, that sounds amazing. How are you able to do this? Well, it's because we're limiting the number of clients that we serve. We just found that we cannot serve more than about 70 clients. Now, if you ask your client how many clients that they think you have, they will tell you, on average, they'll say you have 50.
50?
Okay. 50, 50.
Huh.
Okay. Now, how many patients do you think the average general practitioner has?
A lot.
1,000,
yeah. Guess. Can you guess?
400.
They have between 2 and 10,000.
Okay. Right, that's why they own the houses in Oklahoma City.
So that's why you wait. You know, if there's any interruption in the system, you're waiting there for an hour. And that's horrible service, okay? And thus, it has spawned the concierge physician business, where you don't have to wait. And people are willing to pay thousands of dollars to not wait. And so you can say the same thing. We don't want you to wait. So you're already paying the money. So we're going to have fewer clients, and we're going to give you what we consider the ultimate client experience.
Okay. Rob, what about, I guess on back on the organization of it, we do use a calendar in our CRM, but what's a, when should we start looking at, like, your, you guys use a spreadsheet or something, don't you?
Yeah. Have you had your call with Cindy yet, Cindy Bowie?
No.
Okay, so you need to have, we'll schedule that for this week. And what she'll do is give you the scheduler, okay, which is, the calendar is great, except if you try and do 12-4-2. If you do 12, it'd be simple, right? But when you put four meetings in that are equally spaced, two of them in person equally spaced, it gets really tricky. So we developed a scheduler that where you simply drop the name in and it populates your calendar on Outlook so that you don't have to do that. It's too much work. So we developed that program years ago and have updated it and updated it and updated it. So it's pretty cool. And so that works. She'll help you do that. And then she can explain anything about the folders that you need explained. I mean, the folders are pretty straightforward. It's in the workbook. Under chapter 14, we have got examples, and we cover it also in the workbook. But if you have other questions or want a sample, she can send it to you.
Okay.
So that's something we need to get done. But that's part of the magic of Supernova there, just getting organized. And then the annual reviews kind of go out the window. Because, you know, why should we have, you know, 50 annual reviews in January? You know, it makes you kind of crazy. So we spread them out all year, and so everybody's on their own calendar fiscal year. They have their own kind of special fiscal year of their own.
Okay.
So information about, let's see, we cover in chapter 5, we cover the organization of the folders and what's supposed to be in each folder. Again, there's a rationale for all of the items in the folder. You can decide that I don't want to use this and I don't want to use that. I want to use this instead. But I'd like you to tell me what changes you want to make to the folder because I want to learn if you've got a better idea. And if you're going to throw something out, I can explain why it's in there and why it might you might be missing an opportunity. Okay?
Okay.
Next week we cover creating rituals around your day, kind of creating your ideal day, week, month, and year. And this is particularly important for teams because, you know, not everybody can plan their vacations on the same week. So you want to think about when people are off, how you're going to handle that, and a new team I was just coaching said, how do you handle vacation if I'm off? I said, either I take the folders with me if I'm on a business meeting, and I work around it. Well, I clearly can't call when I'm on the plane, but I can call when I'm in the airport. I had three calls at the airport. I just got there early. Out of Charlotte. I was flying out of Charlotte. I got there at 9. I had a 9 o'clock appointment. We left for the airport. I got there at 12. I had three calls, I think, and then we jumped on the plane at 4. So you know, it worked out fine. My wife is very tolerant. So she, you know, she lets me do all this stuff. Anyway, if you're going to be technically, you know, on vacation, you don't want to work, then you just let either push them back, not do them, or have one of your partners do them. You can have, they can be administrative calls. And administrative calls are great. I suggest doing at least one administrative call every year. And that's handy when you're on vacation. An administrative call is everything that you don't want to cover, but are interesting for the client in terms of online accounts and, you know, other things that, you know, services that they may be, credit cards and checks and things like that. Whatever you guys want to cover that are supplemental services. Okay. Getting the team organized. That's really what Chapter 3 is about. And that's as important as getting the clients organized, right? You want to get your 12-4-2 scheduled with your clients, but you need your team organized. So we introduced what somebody called the 5-star model. This helps us coach. When I was managing offices and managing FAs, it was very important that I had a coaching model that I could use for teams. And there wasn't one, so we created this. We call it the 5-star model, and everybody has a role and responsibility. Even when you think of it as a sole proprietor, your practice is broken into 5 different elements that we think of. One is planning. Everything that you do is based on a client plan, like a financial physical. Implementation of that planning process, that would be the asset liability side of the balance sheet. How are we going to invest the money? How are we going to borrow money? How to make our practice, make our client's life efficient and effective? And then service, how are we going to service the client, solve problems, as well as set up a regular client contact system? And that we call brand management, because we protect our brand by making sure that every client has the same experience. So just like going to the Mercedes dealer, it doesn't matter if you've got an SL550 or you've got a, you know, GLK350. Nobody cares. They give you the same service. You get a great loaner, and they treat you like a king. And that's what we want. Everybody gets a great experience. And then the 4-star is the vice president, or the, a lot of people like to use directors now instead of vice president, director of marketing. That would be sales and marketing, who is going to be in charge of growing the team. And then the last role is the director of leadership, and that's the person that creates the vision, the purpose, the mission, and helps everybody communicate, in charge of making sure we have proper communications. Our mission is being completely integrated in everything we do. They're in charge of the personal development of each person on the team, and they're making sure and holding everyone, including themselves, accountable for the goals that they've set for the year. So those are the 5 stars, we call, keeping with our celestial theme. Okay. Any questions on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Do you have people set in your mind that would be taking on each one of those roles? Or do you want to talk about it more?
Who's on first here, guys? Who's the director of planning? That's me doing. Laura. Actually, let's go back. What is our brand?
Well,
We'll do that later.
So Laura, are you up for being the director of planning?
I am.
VP of brand, our brand is the tie service model, however we define it.
That's kind of implementation.
That's scheduling, right, Rob?
Well, implementation is your investment process, your liability process, how you manage that client's assets. And then brand management is service, client service overall in terms of operations and scheduling appointments and the rest of it.
What I had down here, you guys, is VP of planning is Laura. Dennis, you support her. And I guess I'm behind you on that. Implementation is Brian. Dennis, you
maybe that'd be Debbie.
No, implementation is oh, investment. Right. Here's how we're going to invest your assets.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, Rob?
He's thinking of, yeah, that's what
he VP of brand is, I think, Darlene, you're the service manager. But
yep.
Debbie's all the scheduling, Rob. So, I mean, Darlene is service, like, you know, she does paperwork, she does cashiering, she does minimum distribution, she does distributions when clients want money. As articulated before, she accepts checks, she opens accounts. So I don't know who service is. But our brand is Supernova Service, right? So
right. That's part of your brand. But your overall brand is more than that. So Darlene would be in charge of what we used to call operations. And Debbie would be in charge of Supernova scheduling and appointments and running the calendar.
Correct?
Yeah. So those two would be in charge. All right, and then marketing. That's the growth of the company.
That's new. Probably Dennis. That means that.
We don't really do any marketing though.
Yeah, that's kind of getting your name out and talking to kind of keep up with the prospects, doing pipeline, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, what is marketing, Rob?
Marketing confuses people because they think of it as, oh, it's our website or something. Think of it as how it's the elements associated with everything you need to do to grow your brand, grow your company. Thanks. So think of it as maybe sales and marketing. It makes it easier for people to think of it. So how are you going to bring in new clients? That's really what it is. Bring in new assets, bring in new clients. So is that, Dennis, is that right?
I think so.
See, this is how we are on those things.
Yeah, I get that.
All right, now leadership doesn't have to be, you know, one person, the biggest producer or anything like that. It can be the person that wants to lead it. Okay, it's the person that is leading it. But I've had a lot of other teams where the biggest producer does not want to lead it anymore. They're just tired and they want somebody younger and more enthusiastic and, you know, and that's good actually, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have to have these roles forever. You can have them for 6 months and then trade them off, or have them for a year and then trade them off.
Okay.
Right, so leadership is the person that is in charge of people development, overall direction of the company, future of the company, growth, everything. But they don't, you know, obviously if everybody else is doing their job, then the leader doesn't have to do everybody else's job. So it's the person that holds people accountable.
Okay.
So who would that be? Want to talk about it, or you want
to? I mean, to me, we both kind of do both of those last two.
Yeah, that's the thing. We both kind of do. I mean, I guess on the hardest of decisions, it's Brian, typically. But
Brian?
Lord knows I need some coaching, but yeah, I reckon on the hardest of decisions, it would be me.
Okay. Okay, so, you know, obviously you can discuss this like you discuss your minimums, but these are good things to discuss, by the way. So, never, you know, don't worry about, I mean, talk it out, you know. But it sounds fine to me. And what you're going to find is that your product, these are big productivity enhancers. When you get yourself aligned with doing things that only you are responsible for, you will do them, you will hold yourself more accountable, and you'll have more productivity.
Okay.
Good.
We all know that. We all intuitively know this, but we, you know, we tend to be nice and to each other, and we don't want to hold each other accountable. And so, I mean, look, they said that human beings avoid conflict. We are pleasure seekers. We don't want conflict. We don't want risk. We avoid fear. But whenever, you know, the people that accomplish the most and are most admired are the people that do all the opposite. They're not pleasure seekers. They're the opposite. They defer gratification. They put things off until a later date. They look out for others. They're not selfish. They're focused on things that are hard to do. They overcome fear. And those are the people that end up being our leaders and the people we admire most. So in everything that we do here, it's a microcosm of life. Everywhere. So everything that we do, we say, okay, set new high minimums. Oh my God. You know, it's hard because it's fear. It creates fear in us. So, you know, what if we can't get any of those people? And what if, you know, we make up all kinds of things. My coach, Larry Wilson, who I want you to read his book called Playing to Win. It's a great book. He unfortunately passed away, but he was my inspiration. Brilliant guy and a terrific person. Anyway, he has a million different things about life and about fear. And the basic premise of the book is that we should spend our time playing to win, not playing not to lose. Okay? And if there was one thing that I thought that Philadelphia did that typically the Patriots usually do, is that Philadelphia played to win. There was no question about it. Going for it on fourth down is definitely playing to win, right? You're breaking the rules, you're going for it. And so guess what? They won. They were not playing not to lose. Playing to win, by definition, this is a good definition for your kids and your grandkids, if you have them, which you don't. You're too young. But it's going as far as you can with all that you've got. Right? That's playing to win. Playing not to lose is kind of like the best you're going to get from when you play not to lose is you're probably not going to die. But the worst that's going to happen to you when you play to win is that you learn and you grow. So get your kids to play to win, That doesn't mean beating somebody up. It just means playing to win, taking the risk, going for it, entering the race. 80% of winning is entering the race. Most people don't enter. I mean, you hired me. You hired me. Think about it, right? How many hire me? Not many. So you're playing to win. You're taking risks. And that's the game. So every decision you make, think of yourself, are we playing to win or are we playing not to lose? You know, are we protecting ourselves or are we, you know, are we just trying to survive or are we going for it? Are we going for it and for it down? Not, you know, you don't have those opportunities every day, but the question is, think of this as in your marketing. If you knew everyone that you called would say yes, even to just an appointment, right, who would you call?
Everyone. What do you mean?
Okay. So think about that. And the truth is, most of them would take an appointment with you. And the reason we don't call is because we, in our mind, say, oh, they wouldn't take an appointment. Or they wouldn't do business with us. Because, and you make something up. Larry used to call it an advanced degree from NSU, making stuff up. And that's what we all do. We all do it. We make excuses as to why we can't do something because, you know, because of fear. It's all fear. And so, you know, we as a team can be great by supporting each other. We call it being on belay, being there for each other, making sure the person is safe, encouraging them to take more risks, but being on belay, making sure we catch them if they fall. Okay? So that's the game. There is no, we have rules in my world that when somebody took risks, we supported them no matter how they came out. Okay? So that's it. We encouraged them, we supported them, and we never made, you know, people made fun of each other. And that's not fun. That's not fair. So we never did it. We're always on the lay for each other. And that's a great environment, a safe environment. And that's what you want to create.
Okay.
So there's two great books. One of them is Playing to Win by Larry Wilson. And the other one is The Power of Full Engagement by Jim Lehrer, L-L-E-H-R. And his premise is, you know, how would you perform if you were fully engaged at all times? You know, what would your productivity look like if you were fully engaged? And how do you increase your capacity to be fully engaged more and more and more until you're absolutely fully engaged every minute that you're there? It's hard. It's hard to do. But he shows you how to do it in the book. You get ideal performance by having ideal recovery. So that's the basic premise. And creating rituals. So much of what we teach is rituals. That we're all given the same amount of discipline, but when we create rituals around that discipline, then we are able to not use it because it becomes a ritual, like brushing our teeth. Getting a 6-year-old to brush their teeth, or a 5-year-old, or like my 4-year-old brushes it, wants to brush their teeth now because my daughter's so good with it. But most people don't want to do those things, but once they get to become the ritual, then they can't stand not doing it. Like, working out is not a natural thing, therefore, you have to become a ritual. When it becomes a ritual, then you feel bad when you don't do it. Okay? So that's what, and we'll show you how to create that world where you're creating rituals around things that are good for you. and avoiding the things that aren't good for you. So that's enough for today.
Okay.
What are the three big takeaways from today's call?
I think just finalizing our minimums and then figure out what we have done and need to do in our existing folders, maybe. There's a few things that's being here that I'd like to add to ours.
I'd like to hear from everybody. What was your key takeaway, Laura?
For me, I mean, just in process is ritual for me.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, like, here's our process, here's what we do consistently each time, and that's really hard to do, I think, because each individual client's different. And, you know, we do something one way, and then we do it for a while, and then something comes up, and it's like, oh, let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, but we really jump ahead, and I don't know if it's, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, we think we have to do that to keep the client.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think what Rob's saying about rituals is, especially where we are now, we got we have a lot of clients. We're blessed. It's a huge blessing that we shouldn't just not be grateful about. By the same token, if we don't have this as our ritual of how we do things that align, then the client is always pushing us. No, let me tell you how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's, Arlene, what's your key takeaway or insight?
There's a lot over the call. I mean, there's a lot of information.
I mean, really, it's just follow through.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done this before, and it works. So, I mean, I think it's just...
Yeah, we should get better at it.
It's a matter of just making a phone call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the ritual thing is... To me, what I hear.
It's good.
Go ahead, Debbie.
Okay, good. Now, guys, this is a great technique that you can use with clients, okay? What happens is you spend time on a call like this or you have a review, and it's all in your short-term memory. And what you need to do is help them to get it from their short-term memory to their long-term memory. And so by asking them, what did you value from this experience today? Or what are the three big takeaways from our review today for you? You're finding out what it is that they valued. Did they hear you? Right? But it also moves it from their short-term memory to their long-term memory. So in coaching, it's really important for you guys because when you state it, it becomes yours then. So if you like the idea of rituals, which I heard, then that becomes important to you. And you say, okay, that's going to be locked in then. You're going to say, okay, is this a ritual? Can we convert this into a ritual? Can we use this as a ritual? So you're going to have that in your mind as you go through Supernova. Right, so that's a great, and we'll talk some more about how do you use that then to lock it into the client's brain that what you're doing is really special for them. They may believe it, but they never stated it. So we're going to ask them that kind of question. What is it that you value from your experience working with us this year, you know, and what do you think we could do to improve, you know? So there are some great questions to ask at the end of reviews that help the clients to be of service to us in terms of what are they like, you know, what are the things that we're doing that they really value? And then what can we do to make their experience a better one? So we'll cover that in our marketing, you know, but it's a good opportunity. So I will probably be asking you that question. What are the three big takeaways or what was the takeaway from today's lesson? So I want you to think about what it is that, you know, you kind of makes an impression on you and that you will you will take away from this experience. And then it kind of gets locked in. All right, so we'll do that. I'll probably, and it's a great technique. The other technique to ask, you know, is, which I ask usually, is what's on your mind? And then what else? What else? What else? Very good when you're starting out a review with a client. Rather than just blasting into the review, you want to, the first thing on the agenda is client's agenda. So there's something that the client didn't email to us. We want to make sure that there's not something on their mind that's going to distract them from what we're saying. So before we get started, what's on your mind? And they tell you, well, my daughter just had a baby and da-da-da-da. Okay? So it's just good coaching techniques that you can use every day in the work that you do. All right? Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you next week. Okay.
All right. Bye.